This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
The theme music from John Ellis, Jazz Sax, begins our program. That's a piece called, a smidgen of a piece called Grace from his first CD. His fifth CD is just out this year called By a Thread. You can learn more about it at the website John Axon, A-X-O-N, Ellis, E-L-L-I-S, .com. Today on Keeping the Faith, we're talking about 100 years of Presbyterian campus ministry at the University of Illinois, and we have as our guests Heidi Weatherford and David Bechtel from McKinley. Heidi, you've been pastor there how long now?
5 years today.
And you're having this 100th anniversary celebration all this year. It kind of has extended the whole school year. What's coming up next?
Well, at the end of January, on January 27th and 28th, we will be celebrating our More Light Centennial. More Light in the Presbyterian Church is the term we use for inclusion of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, and questioning individuals. And we are excited because our guest speaker this year is, at this particular event, is Lisa Larges, who is a woman in the Presbyterian Church who has completed all of her schoolwork and required degrees to become an ordained minister, but because she's an openly lesbian person, cannot be ordained in the Presbyterian Church. And so she's going to come and talk about her experience as an openly lesbian person in the Presbyterian Church, why she stays in the Presbyterian Church after a decade or so of trying to seek ordination, and her organization, which is called That All May Freely Serve. So she'll talk a little bit about that. On Saturday, on the 27th at 10 o'clock in the morning, McKinley is hosting an open forum for all folks who are interested in this topic. Especially we're inviting local congregations and clergy and church members who are interested in hearing from somebody who is lesbian what it is like to live in a church that doesn't recognize their abilities to serve and still be whole people with their spirituality and their sexuality intact. That's at 10 o'clock on Saturday the 27th. She's also going to talk about the Peace, Unity, and Purity Report, which for Presbyterians has been the report of the Task Force on Ordination Standards. And she's going to talk about her reflections on how that might affect her as a person seeking to serve in the Presbyterian Church. So, and also Amasong, the Lesbian Feminist Chorus, is going to come and sing that Sunday, and several other folks from McKinley will be involved in the worship service, speaking and giving testimony and probably singing or playing music as well.
Now, what time is your service on a Sunday morning?
On Centennial Sundays, the service begins at 10 o'clock. But people gather at 9:30. There's fellowship refreshments. There's some pre-service music and mostly a lot of meeting and greeting and catching up and saying hello to everybody, because it is a centennial event. We get people from all over the place, different walks of, you know, different periods of time in the McKinley history who come back and celebrate with us.
So that'll be at 9. People will start gathering at 9:30, and then at 10 o'clock, the service will be on January 28th for that Centennial Sunday.
That's
with
right.
Lisa Larges. And what time is your service on non-Centennial Sundays?
9:45.
And where is McKinley Church located?
The church is located on the corner of 5th and John, right on next to the campus of University of Illinois.
Now, David Bechtel, you worked just down the street from McKinley during your years at the university. Tell us what you did professionally.
I was a career counselor, and the Career Center is now located on Wright Street, but at one time it was a part of the Student Services Building that was literally on John Street, the same street that McKinley was on.
One block away.
Absolutely.
And how did McKinley Church get such a wonderful location on this campus to be of service to students and others?
I think that the history tells us that they happened to be at the right place at the right time in the early formation of the university, when the university president happened to be Presbyterian. So that the Synod that created this campus ministry, or was starting to create it in 1906 and 1907, made contact with the university president, who probably guided them toward the availability of good land purchases.
And Heidi, I know you've done some research about that time. Was this a controversial thing, or did Presbyterians across the state kind of get excited about it?
At the founding of the foundation of the church? Actually, Steve, I haven't done much research,
okay.
But Dave
might know, or
you even, Steve.
One of the nice things about being retired is you can volunteer yourself, and I volunteered myself to be an unofficial historian. And it has been fascinating to be able to look into some of the records and the background. There really was no controversy. That was the state of affairs for universities, state universities, and so on, because most of the colleges and universities were religiously based. So that the controversy may have come from the land-grant institution being non-religiously based, but the atmosphere and the attitude of faculty and the administration of the university was very positive toward foundations from the various congregations and backgrounds.
I knew the first colleges in this state were supported by the Presbyterian Church. Illinois College in Jacksonville would have been
correct.
The first. And I thought perhaps there was some kind of uneasiness about the Presbyterians going to start a campus ministry at the university. I know there was for Catholics.
Yeah.
Catholics felt, we've got our own colleges, and they weren't sure they wanted a Newman Center here.
Indeed, there may have been some discussion among the Presbyterians themselves. And perhaps I misunderstood your question about whether there was some controversy within the campus itself, which is in more recent times more common, perhaps. But again, I think you're right, in the sense that there was a new competition, institutions, I think Millikan was formed at that time, too.
I don't remember the date of that. One of our listeners may know that and call in and tell us. I can't remember when Millikan started.
But there was clearly another Presbyterian schools that
Lake Forest College.
That's right.
Monmouth College.
Sure. So, well, that's an interesting history. Let's talk a little bit about what you've done this year to celebrate the centennial at McKinley Church and Foundation. And we might tell listeners, what's the difference between the church, the congregation, and the foundation?
I'd like to weigh in on that.
Sure.
We've done a lot of research and legal pursuit in that just recently, so it's fresh in my head. The foundation was formed first. The foundation was formed by, as Dave said, by the Synod to make sure there was a Presbyterian presence on the University of Illinois, and then later on Parkland College was included in that. And land money for a pastor to be a startup campus minister was given, and then eventually land was purchased. And then the church was formed. And the church actually is nesting within the foundation. The foundation owns the properties. The foundation pays for the staff. The church is as if it's a mission of the foundation. It's separate because as a Presbyterian church, it runs in a different manner than the foundation does, which is a corporation under state tax law. So they are separate, and yet they're very much symbiotic. They're very dependent on each other. They share staff. They share some of their budgetary stuff, and they certainly share their buildings. And they both attract students and different kinds of students. Some students who are looking for a home away from home tend to come to the church, and others looking for a great place to study or grab a cup of coffee come to the foundation.
And you're in two different buildings, side by side, connected by a walkway, a covered walkway.
A breezeway.
And And there is that cooperation. There, mm-hmm. It's not one is fighting with the other, like as happens, I know, in some situations.
Yeah. I think that's been a part of the history ever since the church was built. And the church cornerstone was first put down in 1911, and then the dedication was in 1912. And then the foundation building was built in the midst of the Depression, which is one of the amazing things about it in the 1930s. But even from those early days, there was a sense of wholeness about the church and the foundation and a joint mission that included a campus ministry.
Tell us about the campus ministry side of things. What's going on these days?
Well, these days, we're in a time of transition. So campus ministry is active current campus ministry is mostly a ministry of space. We offer space to all kinds of student groups and organizations. Come in and use our facilities. We have a hall that seats at least 450, and the sanctuary is a good 200 or 300, and the church basement can fit probably about 100. And so student groups do come in and use that. We have I do a lot of one-on-one counseling. Different folks on the staff and in the congregation teach at the university level. And then there's just a lot of students who come to the church who are involved, especially graduate students, involved in many different ways. But we're in a big time of transition. And so when you want, we can talk about the big building project.
Well, let's talk about that. This
well,
is a good time.
I think Heidi's far too modest about it. It's literally a time of opportunity rather than transition. There have been three phases, I think, in the history of McKinley. And the first was establishing the ministry. And those were the days when the buildings were built and the ministry was established. And then the period of social welfare and social justice that the church got so involved in. Now we're beginning a third period. And that third period is what's so enormously exciting. And a lot of its focus will be on campus ministry with our major, major project.
So the major project is a reconstruction, if you will, of Presby Hall. Presby House, which is also known as Presby Hall. Presby House is probably about an 80-year-old home mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. on our property. It was once a fraternity, and then we purchased it, and has been a residence hall for about 30 to 40 women throughout the years, and more recently about 25. And we're going to tear that down and build a new 255-bed housing project that will be a location, a faith-based, progressive, social justice and service-oriented living and learning community. And we're hoping that will attract students who want to learn more about their faith, broaden their faith, deepen their faith, regardless of what faith tradition they're from. It's not going to be exclusively Christian. It's going to be interfaith in nature, but we will certainly offer lots of Christian Bible study as well as other kinds of comparative religious studies, and we're very excited about this. It's going to not only build this big six-story building, it's going to connect to the foundation building, and we'll be renovating the foundation building. It'll have the same wonderful terrazzo floor and wood, heavy wood look about it, and yet it will have a little bit more of a breath of fresh air. It'll be an open space, and we hope to expand the cafe that's currently there and make it a good community center for students on campus.
And so this will be a building which will be where the current Presby Hall is, but much, much larger, six
much
stories.
Much larger. It'll extend almost to the sidewalk.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So from the sidewalk all the way back to the foundation building, and for anybody there who knows our plant area, you'll understand that it is quite a significant.
You have about two-thirds of that block or three-fourths of that block
right,
of property.
About three, yeah, uh-huh. about Yes, I don't know if it's two-thirds or three-fourths. We share the whole block with a fraternity and a University of Illinois parking lot.
Mm-hmm. Another unique feature that bespeaks the connectivity is that it'll be connected with church as well. And there will be a breezeway that will connect the new building.
It'll look like the current walkway between the foundation building and the church.
So it's both an operational attachment and also a traditional one and a symbolic one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another traditional and symbolic thing is the Presby House porch has some fairly unique architecture, mm-hmm. and we do have to tear that down, but we're going to build a gazebo instead, and we're going to use the same architectural designs and as much as possible the same brickwork mm-hmm. and woodwork from that porch so that the memories that a lot of people have of courting and sitting out on the porch, they can come to the gazebo and still feel like there's a remnant of that former building and a memory for them of their former time.
Indeed.
Part of the other thing about the new ministry is we're in the process of searching for an associate pastor whose primary responsibilities are going to be campus ministry. And that person is going to have a great and unique opportunity to create, be right on the ground floor of creating this campus ministry and this mission effort mm-hmm. that we're doing. We're very, very excited about this.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Reverend Heidi Weatherford, pastor at McKinley Presbyterian Church at the University of Illinois campus, and one of the elders of that church, David Bechtel, who is the former director of the
Career Center.
Career Center was the name. Mm-hmm. I learned an earlier name long time ago.
Indeed. It's gone through about six different iterations of name changes.
And you've been retired now how long, David?
3 years.
From the Career Center. Listeners are encouraged to call in. This is a live program every Sunday afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m. Central Time. And we are eager to have listeners join the conversation in Champaign-Urbana. The number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters of the station, of course. Elsewhere, we have listeners where it's a long-distance call. We do have a toll-free number, so if you're listening anywhere in the continental U.S., including on the Internet, this program is live on the Internet each week. 1-800-222-9455 is a free call, toll-free call. 1-800-222-WILL if it's a long-distance call. So if you have questions or comments, do join us. This is a live program. Well, let me ask a little bit about what's already happened during this centennial year of the McKinley Presbyterian Church and Foundation on this campus. What have you already done to celebrate?
I'll pick that up.
That's fine.
The first event of the centennial year, and we established the centennial year to be actually 2 years because in 1906, there was the appointment of the first minister to come, but in 1907, the first group of students started meeting as a student church. So we felt that we would be able to extend over a full year and do 8 different events that we've organized. I think it's 8, or is it
mm-hmm.
not?
8.
The first event was to honor and to identify and highlight the ministry of Reverend James Hine. He had passed away earlier in the year at the age of 96, I believe. And we had even in the planning stages hoped that he might be able to come back and join us. But we were very happy to have two of his 3 children to come back and join us. It was their first time back in Champaign-Urbana since they left in 1968. We did have anywhere from 30 to 40 of the people that were involved in the church and were married by Dr. Hine come back and join us in the service. Following that September beginning was in October.
And before you go on, let me just say for listeners who may not have known this, Reverend Dr. Jim Hine focused a great deal on preparing
mm-hmm.
couples
Absolutely.
For marriage. And he taught classes at the university here. After his retirement at this university, he taught at the University of Arizona.
Right.
and has written several books about helping couples plan for their relationships and plan for how to deal with problems that come up in all relationships. And he even had a television show here in Champaign-Urbana.
One of the very early ones on Channel 3.
Yes, before dealing with those kind of issues.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when I was a student here, I took that course.
Oh, did you?
And one of the guest speakers that came back was one of Jim Hines' associates, Jim Ray, and he was my instructor back in those days.
Jim Ray is a longtime campus pastor, now retired from Youngstown, Ohio, where he served most recently.
And the primary message that Sunday was brought by Dick Watts, who's from Normal, and may, in fact, be in the listening area of WILL and was also an associate of Jim Hines while he was a pastor here. The October event that we had was the focus on social justice, and the pastor director that followed Jim Hines, Dick Lundy, came back to join us from Minnesota and to celebrate the tradition that was begun with Jim Hines and his associates with civil rights involvement and the like, and was continued to a great extent with Dick Lundy. In the years that there were demonstrations against the Vietnam War and our involvement in so many, many different social justice activities over the years that have become a part of the hallmark of McKinley. And in November, you came back.
yeah, the listeners,
if you can say you came back.
The listeners, some of the listeners may not know that Steve Shoemaker was a former pastor director at McKinley.
Thank you.
So as part of our centennial, we did indeed invite him back for the student ministry weekend.
We indeed had Steve help us celebrate the fact and the practice of our student ministry, and the fact that we were the first, McKinley was the first church in the United States and in the Presbyterian churches that was built specifically for students. So the tradition of our student ministry on this campus is a very long one, a very rich one, and we found no one better than Steve Shoemaker to help us to celebrate that.
Well, it was a treat to be invited back, and I remember when I first went to be interviewed at McKinley, the first week, I guess the committee had recommended my name to the presbytery had approved it, but I had to preach a sermon in the Presbyterian system for the congregation to hear and then vote immediately afterwards on whether I would be called as this pastor, and I'd been in North Carolina for about 12 years. And I remember coming up that January, and it was snow on the ground. And my son at that time was about 10. And I can remember him climbing with perhaps one of your children, Dave. I don't remember who. some of the kids in the congregation, they climbed up on the university parking deck, the top floor opposite McKinley Church, and were throwing snowballs down at people going into the church from the parking lot. And I thought, so I was just getting ready to go in and preach my sermon, and someone came in and told me, the police have your son and some other children from the church, and they've been throwing snowballs at cars. Snow, of course, is very exciting to a kid from North Carolina.
That's absolutely.
which is, I'm sure, the police understood. But it made me a little nervous preaching that sermon.
Well, it may have been my children, too, but I was on your committee, so it was easy to forgive you.
Well, I enjoyed my years at McKinley very much. It was wonderful to be there. An exciting place. Well,
yes.
Tell us what's happening after January, because you're going on with this centennial for several more months.
That's right. We have several more events to come in March. The first weekend in March, we'll be having our music centennial, and it may expand a little bit to include other art forms, because McKinley has, throughout the years, held music near and dear to us. It's an important part of our mission and ministry and offering to the community. And so plans are still being firmed up for that Sunday, so I can't give you concrete things, but some of the things that are being discussed is having a reunion choir. So anybody who's ever sung with the McKinley Choir and or directed the McKinley Choir and or played the organ along with the McKinley Choir for the McKinley are certainly encouraged to come back and sing with us. We'll be rehearsing at about 8:45 that morning to quickly learn a piece.
Now, what Sunday is that in
that's,
March?
That's March 4th.
March 4.
March 4th. And other things that are being discussed for that Sunday or for some time that week are a possible organ recital and maybe some kind of talent show for featuring the talents of people from McKinley. We are blessed with a lot of musical, very good talent in our congregation, so we thought it might be kind of fun to do something like that. But these are all very tentative plans at this point in time.
Now music is a skill of yours, isn't it?
Yes. I was, before I went to seminary, I was a music teacher and I was a music major and went to Westminster Choir College in Princeton, New Jersey, a small school that specializes in choral conducting and it's church music.
Generally considered the best in the country.
Well, the people from St. Olaf's might disagree with that, but certainly was my bias growing up. And so the music is near and dear to me, and it's very – one of the reasons I came to McKinley was because of their music. And it's not all classical music. We have great bluegrass musicians, high-caliber bluegrass musicians, and jazz musicians, and other musicians who maybe roots are in folk rock and things like that. So on Sunday mornings, you never quite know what might creep into the worship service depending on who's available to sing or play that day. It's kind of fun.
I remember a rock and roll service that was very enjoyable when Susan Olson was a student, and she's now one of the chaplains at Yale University.
Right.
Isn't that right?
And for the centennial back in November, when you were there, Steve, we had a jazz combo service. So, a student, a graduate of Millikan, musician from Millikan.
And so. I can remember when the Medicare used to be an annual event.
Medicare's
a great great Dixieland experience. Well, before we hear more, let me take just a moment. We're about halfway through our program, and listeners may like to know what's coming up on Future Keeping the Faith hours here on Sunday afternoon on WILL AM 580, a listener-supported service of the College of Communications here at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Coming up next week, we'll be talking with Irfan Ahmad and Mohammed Abdullah about the image abroad of U.S. Muslims. That'll be here January 14 at 5 o'clock here on WILL AM 580. That's Irfan Ahmad and Mohammed Abdullah talking about the image abroad of U.S. Muslims. And then on the 21st, David Eisenman will be talking with us as our guest on the important issue of the ethics of torture. That's on January 21st. Later on, we'll be hearing from Mike Mulberry about his recent trip with Witness for Peace. We'll be hearing from Larry Greenfield, an American Baptist executive in Chicago, about some of the concerns in Chicago on Palestinian issues, some of the programs coming ahead on Keeping the Faith. Support for these programs is provided in part by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois, where I'm the executive director now. I've been there since 1999 on staff. Before that, I served as a volunteer on the Friday Forum Committee, which McKinley Foundation has supported for many years. And we often had a clergy representative and a lay representative or two on that committee that planned the talks at the Y. Also supported by Wesley Foundation, the Episcopal Church Foundation, the First Mennonite Church of Urbana. And this semester, those will be starting up soon. And the focus this semester at the Y on noon at Friday Forums will be interfaith relations, the kind of challenges and opportunities that are present these days. The first Friday Forum will be the first Friday in February, so you have a bit of warning. And we have a sterling lineup of some fascinating speakers. President Don Shriver from Union Seminary in New York, former president there, will be speaking. His Oxford University Press book that came out a couple years back deals with these issues. Cynthia Campbell, the president of McCormick Seminary in Chicago, will be one of our speakers. I think she was the first female president of a Protestant seminary in this country. She'll be speaking. Her most recent book also deals with the issue of how one can be a believer in one faith and yet cooperate and affirm others of other faiths. Eboo Patel will be one of our speakers. He is the head of the Interfaith Youth Corps in Chicago, a graduate of the University of Illinois, and involves college students and high school students in service projects with people from Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Hindu, Buddhist backgrounds who learn about one another in the middle of a service project together, a wonderful service learning opportunity. So that should be a marvelous series, Friday Forums. The information will be on the Y website later this week, and there will be printed brochures available sent to all the departments of the university and to various campus ministries here as well. Coming up on WILL AM 580 this week are a couple programs of particular interest to our listeners of Keeping the Faith. Focus 580 on Monday. Tomorrow at 10, David Inge will be talking with Francis Collins, who is a medical doctor and director of the National Human Genome Research Institute, about the language of God. A scientist presents evidence for belief. And later in the week, that's on Monday at 10, later in the week on Thursday, David's guest is a university professor, Ronald Rotunda, professor of law, at George Mason now. We're talking about the Judicial Transparency and the Ethics Enhancement Act of 2006 and the current Supreme Court session. So dealing with government ethics, Thursday at 10, and Friday at 10, another issue that's of very much importance of our time, Earth's sustainability, good news and bad. Jonathan Andrew Foley, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences and environmental studies, director for the Center of Sustainability and the Global Environment at the University of Wisconsin, will be David's guest. That's Friday at 10. And, of course, environmental issues are very important to the university. Why? Where the first and oldest and largest environmental group began on this campus now 30 years ago, Students for Environmental Concerns, one of our strongest programs and attracts a huge number of students each year to be involved in such programs as, starting the wind farm here on campus. It's going to be coming up soon. Well, let's get back to our guest today, David Bechtel, who is the former director of the Career Center at the University of Illinois and an elder at McKinley Presbyterian Church and McKinley Foundation on campus, and Reverend Heidi Weatherford, who's pastor there. Our guest today, and they're talking about the 100-year celebration of this campus ministry, this particular campus ministry at this university. Heidi, tell us what else is coming up after March. March 4 is the music weekend.
Right. Then on April 21st and 22nd, we will be having the centennial event. We'll focus on our Intercambio mission effort. Yesterday, folks from the most recent trip came back into the States and back home
safely,
to Champaign. Most, as far as I know, everybody's home safe and sound. And
they've got great tans.
Yeah, and are exhausted.
From a lot of hard work.
Lot of hard work. For people who may not know, Intercambio Culto Maya is an exchange program that is, I think it started at McKinley with Charlie Schweitzer and Jack Dial and Paul Hickson and Ramon Solis. And it is program where we send folks from our area, and also now Jack Dial is over in Terre Haute, so that campus ministry there sends folks. And then we actually have other campus ministries that join us. The Worcester campus ministry joins us every other year, and there are other folks from all over the country who come and go. They go to the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico for about a week and a half to 2 weeks, about 10 days to 14 days, depending on the year, and live in Maya villages with host families so that they actually immerse themselves in the culture, the Maya culture. And while there, run a health clinic that offers medical and dental and optical help, health care for people in that community, in that village. And they also will build will host a building project of some sort. The community decides what kind of building they want, whether it's a medical facility or a community center or a school, and then our volunteers go down and build it. So it's not your run-of-the-mill mission trip. It's an actual exchange program where we learn as much from the people that we with whom we stay as they get from our help and assistance there. So it's quite an interesting and exciting program, and it's had at this point about 23, 24 years of existence. And so Ramon Salis, who is the pastor in the Yucatan who we connect with, is going to come into the United States and preach for us that weekend. And we'll have a big luncheon after church that day to celebrate Cinco de Mayo about a week or two early and have a good time with each other.
And over the more than two decades of Intercambio, often going twice a year with projects, mm-hmm. summer and Christmas,
right.
Huge numbers of people,
that's
students
right.
and community folks, and as you say, people from other universities have gone and learned so much as well as contributed so much.
It's a great program. The summertime events are usually high school students. That's when the high school students are available and encouraged to go. There's not quite as much living in the Maya community because there is a risk inherent in that our systems aren't used to the organic makeup of the Yucatan Peninsula. We get sick very easily, and we don't want to put students in that kind of danger. So they go in the summertime with a different kind of project.
Now, have both of you gone?
I have not.
You
but,
have not. But how do you
both
have?
Both of our kids have gone.
Both of your kids?
Yeah.
Yes. And I went in 2002, December of 2002.
Mm-hmm. What were your children's experience, Dave?
Life-changing. Mm-hmm. Our daughter went when she was in college or in high school and soon to be in college. And I think it prepared her for a life of service in many ways. Our son went his first year of teaching in the Urbana schools and found it equally instrumental to him as he was working with middle school students at the time.
From many different cultures.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And what about your experience, Heidi?
Oh, I had a wonderful time. It was a great experience. It was hard work, and it was a big challenge for me. I have trouble in the extreme heat, and so I tend to get sick very quickly, and did get sick. But it was a great opportunity, and I plan to go back at some point, and would encourage anybody who's interested. It's not easy. It's not for the faint of heart, but it is a life changing experience, and especially if you've never experienced life in a village in a developing country. You should try to go because it will impact the way you look at the world and the people of the world, as well as how you feel about the United States' role in the world and our witness and ministry to people of the world.
Heidi, if people would like more information about perhaps how to join up for one of the Intercambio experiences in the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico, is there a phone number or a website?
You could certainly call the church, McKinley Presbyterian Church. Our phone number is 217-344-0297. There is also a website. I do not know the exact web address, but if you did a search on Intercambio Cultural Maya, you would find it.
And is there a link from the McKinley website?
Yes, there is a week link from the McKinley website. Thank you, Steve, for reminding me of that. And the McKinley website is www.mckinley-church.org. And I encourage you to come and visit that site. It also has some great stuff about our centennial events. So.
And our history.
And our history.
Let me repeat that information. Phone number 217-344-0297 to phone for more information about the Intercambio Cultura Maya, the mission trips, service trips, or go to the website McKinley, McKinley, hyphen, that's kind of like a short dash,
right,
church.org, McKinley-church.org. Well, our guests today are Heidi Weatherford and David Bechtel. If listeners have a comment or a question, do give us a call here at AM 580. 333-9455 is the number in Champaign-Urbana. There are several local lines that listeners can use. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. I realize this program is not on a controversial subject. We're mainly sharing information. People may have questions that they'd like to ask.
Or memories.
That's right, or memories to share.
I encourage you to share your memories of McKinley.
That would be fine. David, how long have you been a member at McKinley?
I think, it seems long enough that you kind of forget when you join, but I think it's about 27 years. Probably ought to ask my wife about that.
All right. I see we do have a caller on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I'm just curious as to what kind of work people did in the Mayan project. I mean, did they build things? I was just sort of curious as to what they actually did.
Sure. I'll be glad to tell you that. We send several different kinds of folks. People will come in and they will build, like I said, whatever the community wants them to build. So if they want a medical facility, they'll build a medical facility. If they want a community center or a school, they'll build a school. It's not a very large building usually. And sometimes when it's a school or a community center, it's the first of several buildings that will eventually go up. So that's part of it. The other part of it is we send a very large medical team, doctors. We have doctors and nurses who go, physician's assistants, dental practitioners, and volunteers, and they go and run a clinic. And for some areas of the Yucatan, this will be the only time folks ever get to visit a doctor and learn a little bit about that Western style of medicine. It's especially interesting because, and I'm hoping I'm right about this, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say it anyway. My understanding is currently in the Mexican government, if a community builds a health center, a doctor's office, if you will, then the government, as part of its medical school payback program, will send a doctor to work within that community. And so sometimes an organization like Intercambio will send in a health – when we send in our health clinic folks, it's the first time those folks ever see a doctor, and then they begin to learn what a doctor can do for them. And when that medical clinic is built and that doctor comes to their town, their small village, they will know what to do. They'll understand the benefits of that. And so in some ways, it's sort of a Band-Aid approach to healthcare, and in other ways, it's an educational process. We also go in with an educational team that teaches about basic sanitation and
preventative sure.
healthcare, and as well as just basic wellness education.
Caller, did you want to follow up with that?
I just had another quick question.
Sure.
That is, have the Maya preserved their own language?
Very great. That's a great question. Yes. I don't know that it's an intentional preservation or whether it's just that they haven't, not everybody has learned Spanish. So when I went in with my five words of Spanish and the person who was staying in my home with me the other intercambio person spoke fairly good Spanish, we would run into barriers because our host family did not always speak Spanish. They spoke Maya. And so I learned a few extra words of Spanish, and then I also learned a few extra words of Mayan. And that was an exciting thing. But that's definitely a difficulty, especially in the school system, because if the student grows up learning Mayan and they never learn how to write it, it can be a barrier for how well they learn Spanish down the road. And it's an interesting adventure.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Other callers, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, elsewhere, including the internet, 1-800-222-9455. We're down to our last 15 minutes of the program, and let me tell listeners, if you missed the first part of this and would like to hear it, this program will be archived, as are programs here on all the locally produced programs, including Keeping the Faith, at the WILL website. That's WILL.UIUC.EDU. Then go to AM 580 and look for the listing of Keeping the Faith programs, along with Focus 580 program interviews and Afternoon Magazine, of course, and Media Matters. So you can find things you missed, or you can hear other programs from earlier times.
Steve, can I interject with something here?
Please.
We were talking a little bit before about the Students for Environmental Concerns group at the Y, and I wanted to interject that McKinley also has done a lot of work with environmental awareness throughout the years, and down to the fact that we have regular coffee cups in the sanctuary for our coffee instead of disposable
throwaways.
Kind. Yeah, so we can reserve our planet's resources. The new building we build is going to be certified, LEED certified, silver LEED certification. I'm not saying that correctly.
Tell folks what LEED, L-E-E-D, is.
Oh, I don't know what that acronym means. Dave might. But
I'm not sure I can say it either.
But it's
environmental and energy
efficient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so in order to get LEED certification, you have to do a certain number of things that are environmentally friendly, and whether that be the carpet you put down and the kind of chemical output it gives, or what's even more exciting to me as the daughter of a mechanical engineer who used to build power plants, our heating and ventilation system is going to be a thermal generation.
Geothermal. Okay.
Geothermal. Mm-hmm. Production, so that we'll really kind of be – we're very excited about that, and the fact that we can use the Earth's energy to produce the energy the students will be using to heat and cool their building, right, rather than deplete the fossil fuels.
My wife and I did that in our new home, and the geothermal system is just wonderful. Now, it's a little bit more expensive when you put it in, but
it's worth
from
it
then
in
on,
the long
it's, run. It saves so much. And well, we have another caller wanting to join in. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
For Intercambio, other than educational and medical personnel, who are you looking for, and what would one do if they have an interest in gardening and horticulture? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't know about gardening and horticulture in terms of Intercambio, because in many respects what I can do is I encourage you to go to the website and either talk to Jack Dial or Paul Hickson, who are the two co-directors who are in the United States, and they might be able to fill you in more about whether or not there is a need for people with horticultural expertise.
I would think so, because so many of the people are assistants, farmers.
Farming, yeah.
Right, right. However, in many respects,
it's a whole different.
They know better how to handle their particular land than we do. So I'm not really aware that we've done much in that area. However, if you want to go on Intercambio and you don't speak Spanish and you don't have any medical history, you could still come and be part of the process. We have people who work in the kitchen with the cooks there. We have people who work on the sanitation crews, which is a very unglamorous job, but it keeps everybody healthy, and it's vitally important. And we have lots of people who work on the construction site. And
just carrying things and lifting things?
Carrying things. Sure. You actually learn how to build buildings You talk about sustainable agriculture and building use. I mean, the materials that are used are very earth-friendly because it's concrete mixed from the earth that's there and the mud. And it's just kind of a great way to learn. You learn a different style of building when you go serve on a construction crew in Intercambio.
Dave Bechtel and Heidi Weatherford are our guests today, talking about 100 years of McKinley Presbyterian Church and Foundation Campus Ministry at the University of Illinois. Tell us about other events coming up so people might get them on their calendar if there are.
Let me pick up after the Intercambio and indicate we have two more events that will finish out the year. In the summer, in June, the 16th and 17th, we're going to be celebrating the Christian education years that we have. Literally, asking a lot of the McKinley kids, like your kids and my kids, to come back for a reunion and enjoy finding out what happened to them after they moved on to various parts of the world. We will have Marianne Lundy, who is a former Christian Ed director at McKinley and has had careers with the National Council of Churches and the National Presbyterian Church, to be able to come back and address us for that Sunday morning. We will finish the year. Our finale will be in August, and Heidi is going to lead us in a prelude to the future. We're essentially spending the last event of our centennial year anticipating the next 100 years. And as you've heard from us today, we've got a building project and a new period in our history that's just beginning, that makes it very, very exciting.
And let me add something about that. One of the dreams I have for the new student programming is that it will be appropriate for students of all ages and not just college and university students. And so I would like to see McKinley begin to offer an institute of sorts, education for pastors and church workers and other folks interested in the realm of church and theology, ethics, and how to live in the world with each other. And so I'm hoping that that weekend we can use also as a kickoff for that, that there will be, we will be able to find some good speakers to come in and attract pastors and other folks who are interested in digging deeper than what you get on a Sunday morning, and to come and be part of that educational opportunity with us.
Tell listeners where the name McKinley Memorial University Presbyterian Church came from.
McKinley. Oh, Dave, do you want to do this?
Okay. I mean, you started. Go ahead.
McKinley. McKinley, as so many things in the Champaign-Urbana area are the case for the as is the case for so many things in our area. McKinley is the it was created with funds given by Senator McKinley in honor of his father, who was a Presbyterian minister. The gifts came through First Presbyterian Church in Champaign, and the local campus ministry effort was started with those monies. And therefore, it's in honor of that Reverend McKinley.
George McKinley.
George McKinley. And we have fabulous windows, as do so many churches, and our windows are especially fabulous. And one of those windows is dedicated to George McKinley, and that's our Tiffany window depicting the Good Samaritan. And again, if you go on our website, you'll see a picture of that right on the front page.
And if folks who might not want to worship at McKinley but might like to see the this beautiful stained glass window made by Louis Tiffany, they could go to the foundation during the week and ask for a little mini tour. It is a marvelous window.
Absolutely. Please do.
Good Samaritan story.
And many of the more recent windows are very, very unique. The stained glass windows in the sanctuary are a show unto themselves.
And some of them were produced by a local artist and stained glass artist, Rich Taylor of Glass FX.
Right.
Sounds like effects, but it's F and then slash X.
Uh-huh. And they're brilliant. They're brilliantly colored, and they're beautiful, and they represent themes of science and industry, which is found often in the members of McKinley, social justice.
Families,
very
children.
Artistic rendering of the nurturing nature of God, and we have we don't know, we haven't found any other church in the United States that has a pink triangle in it and a rainbow flag to represent inclusivity
for
gay and lesbian.
We think it's the only inclusive stained glass window in America.
Perhaps that's a challenge for other churches to join in,
and also social justice with.
With Rosa Parks
and
Oscar Romero.
We have one more caller. Let's try to sneak him in the last minute and a half. You're on the air.
Good evening. This is someone who has another memory of McKinley, but I wanted to say how much I appreciate the review you folks have done this evening. It's an excellent depiction of the ministry of McKinley Church and Foundation. But my wife and I entered in the late 30s, and when we arrived, we found a congregation very different historically from what McKinley now is. It was almost entirely students. 200 to 250 students would gather, and there were a sprinkling of faculty families who made up the session and officially constituted a church. But the McKinley Foundation student personnel was large enough that we had about 300 who would qualify to be voting for officers in the spring. So it was a tremendously important thing for vocational choice, study of racial issues, justice issues, peace issues, tremendous involvement of students, and much of the program was led by students. The ushers were students, the choir was mostly student choir, and it was a historic era that was the founding era of the church.
Who was the pastor there then, if I could ask?
Then was Walter Malone.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful inspiration, greatly changing the lives of many students. Thank you.
Thank you. And I know that history is there, and so many churches all across the country are experiencing that depletion of students and young people. And so our challenge as we go into this new ministry is how to make church relevant again and how to encourage students to be involved with their faith and how that interprets into the way they work and move and operate in the world. And we're hoping that, you know, we'll be moving back into that. It may not look the same on Sunday mornings. It may look like that on Monday nights or on Thursday nights or on Sunday nights. But we're hoping that
We'll be cheering for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. We certainly appreciate it. Well, we are out of time. Our guests today have been Heidi Weatherford, who is the pastor at McKinley Memorial University Presbyterian Church on this campus and director of McKinley Foundation, the Presbyterian Campus Ministry here at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and David Bechtel, an elder in that church, who was the retired director of the Career Center at the University of Illinois for many years. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. I'm director of the University YMCA. We're coming up this spring semester. Our Friday Forum Topics is on interfaith relations. On Keeping the Faith, next week, we'll be talking with Muhammad Abdullah and Irfan Ahmad about the image abroad of U.S. Muslims. That's here on Keeping the Faith, January 14. Remember, that's also the Sunday of the Martin Luther King celebration in Champaign-Urbana, and at 5 o'clock next Sunday afternoon, everyone is invited to a gathering at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts to hear some wonderful gospel music and to see what local students have received scholarships. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Is it possible to be both a scientist and a person of faith? Geneticist Francis Collins says many people will answer no, but speaking for himself, he sees no conflict between being a rigorous scientist and believing in God. He argues these two perspectives can coexist within one person and do so in a way that enriches the human experience. Monday morning on Focus 580, Collins explains how the revolutionary discoveries in biology he helped oversee enhanced his religious faith. I'm David Inge, Focus 580, Monday at 10, here on WILL Urbana.
AM 580 has a listener comment line. If you'd like to comment on something you hear on the Information Advantage, call 217-333-0853 and leave a message. That's 217-333-0853.
You're listening to WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. Good evening, I'm Tom Rogers. Look for light rain, followed by a slight chance of a few more showers later tonight, the low 28. Light winds becoming west at 10 to 15 miles an hour. It'll be partly sunny.